Welcome back to another episode of the Uncovered Podcast. My name is Matt Hayes, and I'm here with my co-host, Rob May.
Hi, everybody.
And today, what we're going to do is we're going to wrap up our mini-series on COVID-19. And so over the last 6 weeks, we've had the pleasure of talking to a bunch of different entrepreneurs and VCs about navigating COVID, working remote, how VCs are thinking about investing, what it's like to have COVID, and manufacturing during the time of COVID when people are actually coming in and making physical products. And so, you know, it's been a fascinating series, and Rob and I have really enjoyed it. And, you know, as we've kind of gone through the last 6 to 8 weeks here, there's a few, you know, lasting things that we've kind of observed. And for me, you know, Rob, I'd love to get your thoughts on this, but, you know, one thing that I've observed is just from a macroeconomic standpoint, it feels like the stock market is very disconnected from the economy. I mean, you know, there's this saying of kind of don't fight the Fed. And the question just becomes, you know, will the Fed keep pumping money in into the system? And what effects will that have in the future? And you know, what are your thoughts on that? And what have you observed from a macro standpoint?
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm surprised that given the macroeconomic damage that's been done, that the stock market is almost back to where it was before all of this started, right? I mean, we had 3% unemployment, and now we have, you know, 15 or 20% unemployment. And seems like that should be dragging on the market. But, you know, with all the stimulus that's been pumped in, it's interesting. I've been thinking a lot about inflation and been reading a lot about whether or not there'll be inflation, because you may remember in the 08-09 crisis, there was a lot of money pumped into the system and there was concern about it, and we never really saw it. It didn't materialize. But I think things are different this time because, number one, you have a lot more money than you've ever had pumped into the system. Number two, some of the things that kept the inflation down were things like globalization, right? The ability to go find, you know, cheaper prices on certain pieces of your supply chain in other places. That's being reversed a little bit, right? Things are, you know, people are onshoring more than offshoring. They're bringing things back home. There's a movement towards nationalism, both sociologically and for security reasons. And so, so I think that's gonna possibly contribute to inflation. And then you're gonna have probably some concentration in a lot of industries as some of the weaker companies die out, which is gonna give the existing companies more pricing power, you know, which can lead to inflation. And so, you know, the federal government's going to have to make a decision to either, you know, pay this debt off by raising taxes or cutting spending, both of which are very politically unpopular and unfeasible. So there's going to be an incentive to come inflate this away and to maybe drive some light inflation. And I think most entrepreneurs and most investors, you know, myself included, sort of haven't lived through that. And so I think you have to think about if you're a CEO or a VC or anybody like that about what you do if inflation does materialize, right? You want to be in businesses and products and markets where you have pricing power and you can raise your price to offset that, or else you actually lose out economically. So it's gonna be really interesting to see if it happens this time, and if so, you know, how people adapt and respond.
Yeah, or the you know, the Fed could respond with, you know, this is how you kind of grow your way out of it, right? So you pump a bunch of money into the economy, and then 5-10 years down the line, because there's been so much growth catalyzed by that capital, then, you know, the $3 trillion looks a lot smaller. But I agree with you. I feel like that's a much harder argument to buy at this point. And it will be interesting to see how entrepreneurs start to think about pricing power, because it's something that I don't think a lot of people have had to really think about for a long time in terms of, you know, what happens when, you know, their server prices go up and all these different things happen. You know, how do they respond? Were they able to pass those costs on to the customer?
Yeah, you've had everything's been driving stuff down, right? So, you know, AWS and Azure and those things have just been dropping their prices, and we've been in this market where, you know, for the last decade, it's been, you know, social media, mobile, SaaS have been the things that we've invested in. But like we're starting to see tech come to more traditional sort of non-software companies, right? So people are making more tech-enabled devices, things that are connected to the internet, IoT, robots, you know, all this kind of stuff. And so it's going to be interesting to see, you know, those things like your hard material costs might be a little harder to get down and might not have the same deflationary power as AWS and those things had. So, you know, I really don't know what's going to happen, but it's definitely something that I think, you know, we want to keep an eye on.
Yeah. And, you know, what another topic that I think is really interesting is just around kind of the PPP loan. And, you know, I would love to hear, you know, how you dealt with that from a board standpoint. I know a number of companies that you were working with applied and had to do some restructuring from a corporate level. But what I do think is interesting is if you add kind of the intention of what the PPP loan was for, and you couple that with the unemployment benefits being pushed forward, there's this very weird effect going on. So I talked to a few different really small businesses in the service industry, and you know what they said was, you know, they took the PPP loan, and based on, you know, the parameters, 75% of that loan needs to go to personnel, and so when they tried to bring their employees back, they actually weren't able to, because a lot of them decided to just stay on unemployment because they're making more on unemployment than they were making before as either a server or a bartender or, you know, someone doing takeout at the restaurant. And so you have these conflicting effects that are happening where, you know, if you're not at a company that's paying, you know, large wages, actually getting your employees back has actually proved to be really challenging, which is a really interesting observation, you know, just that I've made over the last, you know, couple of months, and just kind of thought about, you know, that could, you know, if they extend these unemployment benefits coupled with the restrictions they're putting on the PPP loans, you know, I think most companies will have to pay them back. I mean, is that correct?
Yeah, they definitely might have to. And it's interesting because I don't know what the boards that you sit on were like, but you know, some of the companies that I work with, that I was involved with, like, this was not one of the things that came up, right? Was whether or not it would be hard to hire these employees back. We actually thought, you know, people just want to work. And I think, and it'll change as some of the unemployment benefits, I think, you know, normalize again. But that's, you know, that's been one of the surprising things about it, I think. I'm curious, like, what, you know, of the discussions that you had, you know, how many, what were the main things that companies talked about when they were thinking about taking these loans or not, or, you know, were you involved in any of those?
So a lot of the early companies that I'm involved with just didn't go down that path. And then some of the companies that are a little bit later stage, they ended up opting not to, just because they felt like, you know what, we're going to end up having to pay this back. You know, there were some quirky corporate things that they had to think about. And I know that you actually went through a full process from a legal standpoint, so I'd love to hear about that. But on my side, I actually don't have any companies that took it. And so I didn't have as much experience with PPP as you may have had with some of your companies.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing that we talked about in some of the boards that I sit on was whether or not the requirements around PPP were going to change, whether or not the political and sort of societal views of the PPP program will change over time. And so we were very concerned. A lot of the companies that really, you know, could you benefit from the money and really sort of fit the mold of what the government was targeting, were just worried about the fact that, you know, the general public or politicians or whoever may really sour on PPP at some point in the future. It was thrown together very hastily. And so as is typical, you know, probably not very well thought through. And so some of the things that we did to mitigate that were, we required board votes a lot of times for every step. So instead of just sort of accepting the loan and everything about it, you know, we might do a board resolution. But, you know, if you haven't been involved in venture-backed companies before, one of the things you may or may not know is that, you know, the CEO can't do everything that they want to do without board approval. They can do a lot in early-stage companies, and, you know, we try not to meddle, but one of the very common terms in venture capital is that any debt incurred over a certain amount, you know, may require board approval, because you don't want, you know, if you raise $2 million and you have, you know, $300,000 in revenue, you don't want the CEO to go out and take $5 million in debt without having a board discussion about whether or not that's the right thing to do. So those caps in early stage companies, you know, tend to be like maybe 250,000 or half a million. And so for some of the companies that were over that in their PPP loans, we would stage the requirements. So we would approve for the company to take the loan, but we would make sure that we did not approve their ability to you know, apply for forgiveness of the loan or repayment of the loan or anything else, because we want to force a board discussion when that happens again, because anytime you have a complex situation like this, you want to make sure you get a lot of different perspectives. And so by forcing a board decision, you know, we can talk about, you know, let's say it's August or September and you're thinking about repaying the loan. What has changed in the political world? What has changed in terms of how people are looking at this? And, you know, there may be cases where even if you've spent the money as proposed, if you're in a position to afford to pay it back, that might be better than asking for forgiveness. They may change the criteria that come with paying back or asking for forgiveness of the loan. And so we really tried to stage it in as a series of votes and push some of those decisions to the future so that, you know, so that we can vote on them at that time. And so I don't know how many other companies did that, but it was definitely something we talked a lot about around some of the PJC companies.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens, you know, as the years kind of go by here as to what happens to those loans and how many are actually paid back. And it'll be really interesting to just, you know, observe how that plays out. And then in just, Rob, in terms of, you know, how you're feeling about the reopening and, you know, people potentially going back to restaurants soon and those types of things and going back to work. And, you know, I think it differs, you know, state to state, but, you know, how comfortable are you with, you know, going to a restaurant or you know, staying in a hotel? And I, you know, just, I'm sure a lot of people who are listening kind of are dealing with similar things in terms of, you know, even though people are going to say it's okay, maybe the government says it's fine and restaurants reopen, how many people are actually going to go sit down? And, you know, what effects does that have, you know, on the economy going forward?
Well, I mean, I actually was so excited that when New Hampshire reopened, I drove up to New Hampshire to go to a restaurant. And it was an interesting experience because what they did was you have to answer questions, right? So when we went to sit down, they said, you know, have you been exposed to anybody in the last 2 weeks that you know of who's tested positive for COVID? Do you have a fever? Are you feeling well today? You had to answer all those questions before you could eat there. Then you had to sit outside. And then you were required to wear a mask if you got up and went to the restroom or were leaving or, you know, doing anything like that. But you could take the mask off when you sat at the table. So I actually felt pretty safe doing all that, right? I think I think you have to remember that the best we understand right now is that COVID is a respiratory, you know, it comes in via respiratory means, and the amount that you're exposed to is going to influence your likelihood of getting it. So like when I go running, you know, I take a mask and kind of hang it around my neck and pull it up when I pass people, but I think the odds of like jogging by somebody outside and catching COVID, even if they're coughing up COVID while you run by, is probably pretty low. You know, I think the problem is lots of people indoors. It's, you know, it's handshaking, it's hugging, it's the things that people do in normal times that are the problem. So I feel pretty good about reopening, but obviously it's different for everybody because you have to say like, I don't interact with anybody. You know, my elderly family is all back in Kentucky and they're not here. And so I don't see anybody regularly that might be high risk if they were to catch COVID. You know, and I'm pretty healthy. And so I think everybody has to make that judgment about, you know, not just, you know, your own concern of whether you get it or not, but who are you likely to pass it to, which is the real problem. And then how disciplined are you about, like, I'm very disciplined about and always have been about washing my hands. And, you know, I was telling somebody, just because I meet so many people in our business, right? You go to all these events, you shake hands. Like all of my jackets, I just keep a little tiny bottle of hand sanitizer all the time. And that way when I'm out and I leave those things and I've shaken a bunch of people's hands, I just hand sanitize. And that's part of the reason that I really rarely get sick. And so it's going to be interesting to see, you know, what happens and if the numbers, you know, crop back up. And I definitely believe there's a way to open and keep the spread of coronavirus down if people are safe about it. But we'll see.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how things, you know, continue to progress. I mean, I don't know. I still don't think it's funny because I've actually had it and I still don't think I'm ready to go back to a restaurant. I think it's just a preference that I'm trying to just steer clear to see how this next month or two plays out, because I think, you know, it doesn't take long for, you know, it's not a very long feedback loop in terms of, you know, do people get reinfected? Is it, you know, do these places become, you know, high probability of, you know, catching this and, or getting reinfected or whatever that may be. And so, you know, I'm kind of cautiously optimistic, but I'm definitely going to let this play out a bit and have been favoring, you know, just cooking outside with few people and whatnot. But it's going to be interesting to see how the world continues to progress. And, you know, I think it was great that we were able to talk to so many awesome people throughout this trying time, as it relates to just, you know, the effects of COVID and how people are thinking about it.
Yeah. And I think the hard thing for us in our shoes is like to recommend to companies what they should do in terms of whether they should be aggressive with their growth plans or not, aggressive with their hiring plans or not. Like, a lot of it depends on when does this finally going to end, right? Because getting back out there and getting open is not going to restore the economy to its previous levels. I mean, there's an article in the Wall Street Journal today that said that it's the Office of Budget and Management and the government estimates it's going to be a decade before we're back to pre-COVID levels. Because, you know, if you have a year to get a vaccine or a treatment and prove it out, and then take some time to, you know, work it through the society, and then people's behaviors have changed and they have to restart, and like, you can't hire everybody all back at once because, you know, people are doing at different parts of the economy. And so I don't know. Have you thought much about that? And have you talked about that with many of your companies?
I think it's just so hard to tell in terms of, you know, how things continue to progress here. But yeah, I think it's going to take a long time. I mean, as we discuss things more and more, it's, you know, pushing companies to continue to have more runway. I just think, you know, I think people are going to be really hesitant from a spending standpoint for a while. I mean, just from a metric standpoint, I mean, savings rates went up significantly just in a 2-month period. And so I think that's going to trickle through to corporate spending. And I think, you know, even industries like B2B SaaS that have just been, I mean, have just crushed the public markets and have been, you know, highly valued on the private side. I think, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how those valuations seem to continue to push forward at record levels. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see kind of some of these up and coming B2B software companies and how quickly they're able to onboard customers. And it could actually draw the timeline out even further that it takes companies to go from kind of inception to, you know, that IPO. So it'll be interesting to see the effects and how things continue to play out.
Yeah, definitely. Well, for those of you who have listened to this this COVID mini series, we definitely appreciate it. Particularly all the guests that we had on, were very, very helpful. And stay tuned. We're going to start working on our next season of the podcast as we go back to the PJC offices and can engage guests sometimes again, over the summer. So stay tuned for something in the fall. We're not going to tell you what it's about yet, but we've already planned some of the guests and topics. And in the meantime, if there's, if you're starting a company and you think PJC might be a good fit, please reach out. If there's things you'd like us to talk about on the podcast, you can email those to podcast@pjc.vc. And we thank you for listening. Go follow us on all our social channels. And if you like the podcast, please send it along to your friends.